Welcome to the 35th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. I've been bringing this podcast as a means for educating people on a whole foods plant-based diet. I've had the pleasure of interviewing numerous dietitians and people along their plant-based journey. Today, I have a very special guest that I actually met through a local dietitian at one of the hospitals. And this guest's name is Carla Dumas. She is the registered dietitian for the American Humane Society. And of course, the first thing that comes to mind is, why does the Humane Society need a registered dietitian? Does she oversee animal food? But as you'll find out, the Humane Society is very interested and progressive in setting up programs to help institutions such as hospitals, universities, and schools start Meatless Monday and Lean and Green programs as a means to promote farm animal welfare, as well as healthy living, and bring awareness and decrease the overall animal consumption as used for food, and to bring awareness for the humane treatment of all animals, not just cats and dogs, but farm animals as well. So it was a really nice pleasure to meet Carla. And in addition, I found out she just lives up the road in Sarasota. So hopefully this will be a ongoing relationship that can help spread the plant-based nutrition world in my world, as well as her animal welfare world. As far as a local note, training is progressing. Running is getting better. Pain-free runner now, so that's wonderful. Swimming and biking, so it's just a matter of building up volume and speed again. So I'm enjoying that. Weather is great here in Southwest Florida. Getting back into the hot and humid training, but I kind of like that better anyway than the cold training. So I'm happy about that. Garden is progressing. It's kind of status quo, so there's not much going on there, but I do have three little trees coming up, so that's a great thing. If any of you are starting, I'm a rookie gardener on my own here, and so I've planted a lot of things, and I haven't labeled a lot of things, so some of the stuff is a mystery. So my trees are all confused about which one's which. I did read a gardening hack on the internet the other day, as far as taking little flat rocks and using a magic marker to put what you've planted on them. So I think that's a good idea. I'm going to try to actually do henceforward. For some reason, I thought I'd kind of remember where I put everything, but it's not happening. So anyway, let's get right into the interview with Carla. I think you'll find it interesting. So welcome, Carla Dumas. Carla is a registered dietitian. She works with the Humane Society as well as the Sarasota School Board in Florida. And it's a unique combination, registered dietitian and Humane Society. So welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
So, Carla, I would guess you didn't come out of school and get a job right at the Humane Society. So how did things progress for you?
Absolutely. Well, you're correct. I would say that my journey into nutrition and working eventually with the Humane Society of the United States was just that, a journey. I would say that it started was very young, toddler age. Growing up, I had sensitivities to milk and eggs, which affected my diet as a toddler and then into elementary and middle school. And I will say that time soy milk has come a very long way. but when I got into high school and had a little more freedom to make my own dietary choices, that my diet left room for some improvement. I was an athlete in high school playing competitive soccer, but I wasn't treating my body in the way that I should be. I was oftentimes skipping breakfast, at lunch, I would have a soda, a bagel, or a cookie. And then after school, my friends and I would go to the closest fast food restaurant and get some food and then come back to soccer practice or a soccer game. And I was somewhat shocked as to why I wasn't feeling great or not performing at the level that I should. So it got to be my junior year of high school when I decided that I needed to do something different diet-wise. What I was doing wasn't working for me. I was tired, lack of energy, again, just not performing like I should. So one of my friends, her mom, was going to start one of the high-protein Atkins-style diets. And she said, well, let's try this out. So gave it a probably lasted a week. It was something I protein I was consuming would be beneficial in terms of athletics. But I felt quite the opposite. I was feeling a lot of stomach issues and digestion issues, and again, just not feeling well overall. So I decided to do my own unofficial research on nutrition.
So you did 2 weeks of an Atkins diet. That didn't work, digestive problem. So you started your own experiment. That's what we...
Yes. And I actually came across a book from the Vegetarian Times. It was a cookbook. And it also talked about, obviously, vegetarian that. It just sort of clicked with me, focused on plant-based foods in the whole form, looking at whole grains and really nourishing your body in that aspect by providing that protein and that lasting energy. So after the Atkins-style diet, I went immediately to a vegetarian diet and found almost immediate results in feeling a lot better in what I was doing for myself, but also seeing a difference performance-wise with my competitive soccer and in school. But that also then sparked my passion and interest for nutrition, which is how I moved forward while I was looking for colleges with a college that really had a good nutrition program.
And so where did you end up? What college?
I actually ended up at the Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida.
Cool.
Yeah. And I would say that at Florida State, knowing that I wanted to focus on nutrition, but really wasn't sure career-wise what kind of path I was going, it all sort of made sense. Again, in my junior year of college, I took a food service management course and had a professor that will forever be ingrained in my mind for shaping a lot of my professional goals and career. Professor Dolores Truesdell was painting food service management, specifically school food service, in a positive light as a career for dietitians. And I immediately became very interested in that idea and thinking about working with children, but also focusing on the nutrition aspect end of it. So I sought out Leon County Schools there in Tallahassee and did a very short internship with them just to get a better idea and fell in love. So that's how I became interested in working in school food service and child nutrition.
Wow. And so that has been your path, designing programs for kids. So is that when you came down to Sarasota, or when did you start working with the schools? Because, you know, typically when you think of school lunches, you know, it's the, I grew up in a really rural area, so we actually had good food, but it was high fat good food. But, you know, but now, you know, I mean, a lot of the schools are having fast foods in them.
Right. With the schools and how I became interested, kind of the next step there was I sought out with becoming a registered dietitian the official internship and credentialing. I did an internship with Sarasota County Schools that did have a school food service management focus. And at the time, there were only two in the country that had that focus. And to the best of my knowledge right now, Sarasota is the only one that has that focus. But once I completed the internship, I became nutrition educator with Sarasota County Schools. And with the schools, in specific, my experience with Sarasota, in my role, was actually conducting classroom education.
Oh.
And, yes, which is, at the time, somewhat unusual, but the director, Dr. Beverly Gerard, that was something that she installed about 10 years prior to when I began, and the program just flourished. And tying the nutrition aspect into the education. So with those nutrition education lessons, we would also do tasting parties, which entailed having fresh fruits and vegetables done in the classroom where the kids could taste them together and making it a fun experience. But all of those fresh fruits and vegetables could also be found in the cafeteria when the kids were enjoying lunch. So it was tying the tasting part in, and then the kids would recognize these foods. So there was a lot of extended education that went into just food service that you may not think would be happening.
Oh, that's fantastic. So were these classes, or are they tied to, you know, it used to be called home ec, but now it's called, I guess, culinary arts, because I like did a little thing down here in Port Charlotte. But was it part of the culinary arts program as well, or completely separate?
It could be. There was a lot of partnerships with the instructors in the culinary arts programs, but a lot of it was just going into the regular classroom at the elementaries and meeting with the kids. Typically, you would go into the classroom three times and do three different lessons with the kids, anywhere from about 30 minutes to an hour, based on what time would allow, and work with them on a really intimate basis to talk about nutrition.
And this is an ongoing program that you still do?
Right now, I worked with Sarasota County Schools for about 10 years. And in January of this year, I began full-time with the Humane Society of the United States.
Uh-huh. Oh, fantastic.
But there, yeah.
So let's stick on that school thing, because I think that's fascinating, you know, because
sure.
There's a lot of data. Again, kids perform better mentally when they have good food, and they're more likely to ask for it, or if they're exposed to the food, especially if they weren't exposed at home, to, you know, ask their parents or encourage their parents to do the right thing. So, I mean, I think that's such an excellent idea. You know, you wish it would be more widespread.
Without a doubt. And I would say that with the last 5 years, with the change in the dietary guidelines, came a lot of standard changes for the National School Lunch Program, tied to the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, which implemented whole grains, increased portion sizes of fruits and vegetables, sodium restrictions, total fat and saturated fat restrictions, looking at that. So a lot of really positive changes came about within the schools and what was being offered to really focus on instilling healthy habits with kids. So what I do now is work with institutions, specifically with schools and districts, that want to take it even a step further and implement programs like a Meatless Monday, or some may call it a Meatless Lead in Green Day, by focusing on a lot of those plant-based entrees.
And that's through the Humane Society?
That is, yes.
And now, I don't know who started Meatless Monday. You have any idea?
Well, it's really interesting. I do. It actually started by our government, which is now the USDA, back in World War I, as a way to conserve resources for troops, and continued then into World War II. But in 2003, the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, along with their Monday campaign, launched the Meatless Monday program again, but this time as a way to combat our obesity epidemic and the chronic preventable diseases that have been tied to it.
Wow. That's wild. You know, the other thing that, you know, war is horrible, but, you know, I just heard a statistic the other day that 44% of our food came from backdoor gardens with the Victory Gardens after World War II or during World War II. You know, so, I mean, it's amazing. Wow. We had it right, and we lost it.
Right. We're just getting back to that place, trying to, right?
Yeah, that's very good. So Meatless Monday was with Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. And so they realized that, you know, I mean, it amazes me how it's kind of brushed under the table, though. You know, so Johns Hopkins School of Public Health realizes that eating more fruits and vegetables is, you know, healthy for you. The American Dietetic Association has said that a vegan or a plant-based diet is perfectly nutrient-dense enough to sustain one, yet we continue to brush it under the table.
I think that we're seeing, and again, with this implementation of Meatless Monday and more, actually millions of Americans and institutions in the United States, but also internationally, are embracing more plant-based eating, whether it's in the form of participating in Meatless Monday, or if they're calling themselves a reducitarian or flexitarian. We're definitely seeing that more in the millennial segment, that the demand is there, that more and more people are wanting these meatless options and plant-based options. And I think it's really encouraging, too, that it's no longer going to be swept under the table. With the latest dietary guidelines report that came out in early 2015, their suggestion is focusing on specifically a diet on plant-based foods and a focus on that, and talking about the health benefits, but also the environmental aspects of that. So I think with the research that's coming out, what you talked about with the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, the American Heart Association, Cancer Research Associations, I mean, they're all backing and stating the importance of plant-based eating. So I think that it is catching on, and more people are realizing that it's going to be important for their health, the environmental factors, and then also the animal welfare factors tied in.
Which leads me to, you went from the school district to the Humane Society. So, I mean, what was that job offering like? I mean, how did that come about?
Well, it's really interesting, but with my background working in Sarasota schools and just school food service and institutional food service, along with my experience in working with a district that actually did implement Meatless Monday, made this position really appealing. And thinking that I would have the ability at a national level to work and support districts that are participating in these type of initiatives was really exciting. So in the personal end of my feelings with focusing on plant-based personally and with my family and my love for animals, I saw this as an excellent way to match my professional and personal goals.
So, but, you know, what was the Humane Society looking for?
Well, it's very interesting, too, because when I told people that I was going to be working for the Humane Society of the United States as a registered dietitian, so, well, are you going to be putting together menu plans for dogs and cats? But actually, with the Humane Society of the United States, they're the largest animal protection organization working to protect all animals from suffering and cruelty, and that would include those animals that are being raised for meat. So I work specifically under the Farm Animal Protection Department, so looking to benefit the lives of people health-wise, but also animals as well. So this position in particular, what the Humane Society was looking for, was a registered dietitian with a background in school and institutional food service to help support the growing demand for districts and other institutions that are looking to implement these type of programs. So just to give you a little idea, what I do in terms of support for these school districts and other institutions is coming up with cycle menus and recipes, specific to schools and the National School Lunch Program, there's specific nutrition standards and guidelines in terms of what foods and how much protein and grains and fruits and vegetables must be offered. So with a background and understanding of standardized recipe development focused on that, that's been one of my main goals, is to work on recipes that are 100% plant-based, but still student-approved and accepted, that we can share with districts all over the country.
Wow, that's really cool. It's amazing, the insight, too, of the Humane Society. Think, you know, well, we can get the, you know, how to reach out. I think that's pretty cool. Somebody had their thinking cap on, didn't they? Very cool. So you'll set up these programs. My question was, when I lost you, was so you travel a good bit setting up these programs then, or?
I do, but I also have colleagues all over the country that help with programs in specific areas as well.
And so basically they'll implement these in Meatless Mondays, and you also, this Lean and Green Day, is that specific to the Humane Society?
It's not necessarily specific to the Humane Society. It's an alternative program that the Humane Society adopted with a lot of institutions. And again, going back to thinking about school districts, it can be challenging to implement this type of program on a Monday, depending on labor and produce and grocery deliveries. So the Meatless Lean and Green Day is the same type of concept, just allowing institutions and districts the flexibility to have this program any day of the week.
Oh, I see. Good. So what would be an example of, say, a menu that you would present to a school district or a school?
An example here is, I'll give you some of the more popular ones that we've worked with school districts to offer, but it really is depending on what the district and how many entree options they offer. But for example, we have a Mediterranean flatbread, which is a take on a pizza, but it's using a pureed white bean, almost a hummus type consistency as the topping. And that's gone over really well with kids. We have a Big Bad Bean Burrito, Mighty Pasta Marinara with chickpeas. Some districts do utilize meat substitutes. And one that's been gaining a lot of popularity with its districts because it's actually made with a pea protein versus a soy protein. So really thinking about the allergens there, this is something that could be used more widely. Using that in a nacho or a chili, a lot of districts use, or simply replacing it where you would use beef crumbles using this Beyond Meat product. Uh-huh. So some districts choose to utilize something like that.
Have you tried the Beyond Meat?
I have.
What do you think?
I have. You know what? They're not bad. Mm-hmm. They're not bad. I don't use as much of the meat substitutes in cooking at home, but it's something that I have prepared for some of my family members, and I know in testing the students that truly you can't tell the difference.
Oh, really?
We've worked with districts, and there was a district here in Florida that did the side-by-side comparison of actual beef crumbles versus the Beyond Meat crumble, and the kids preferred the Beyond Meat, which was very interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think those are great ideas. I mean, I think, you know, most kids, I mean, when you go now that, you know, Moe's and Chipotle and everything are around, you know, most kids have been introduced. I mean, I think that's a great place that most people get introduced to beans. And so you're basically just forgetting to put the meat on. And so they can have their bean burrito and everything is great.
Right.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I've done the white bean on top. Again, they don't know that it's a bean, so it still tastes great and it works out good.
Absolutely. Fantastic.
I found that, you know, I've been trying to work with some hospitals, and hospitals don't often have beans, you know, and some of the places, you know, they just have, when you say vegetarian, it's, I guess it's, you know, a marinara sauce with, you know, again, no beans, no nothing, or, you know, a frozen pizza that's, you know, a packaged frozen pizza or some packaged food. So what do you do when you go into a place where they don't have a lot of options? Can you give them ideas and they can purchase them, or how does that work?
Yeah, we have a lot of resources available for institutions, whether it be school districts, hospitals, colleges and universities. We've even worked with food manufacturers in looking at available products that are plant-based, not necessarily just vegetarian, like you were saying, but really focusing on those plant-based options and marketing those. We have a lot of listing and resources available for institutions where they can contact the companies or their brokers and purchase these items. Or we also have a really exciting program that just started in January of this year. A few of my colleagues have put together a food forward culinary experience. So working with institutions that want to implement, whether it be Meatless Monday or other meat reduction efforts, working with their chefs and culinarians on a one to two day experience, hands-on with a chef that is well-versed in plant-based cooking, so that they can understand and get better resources and tools to offer these healthy, delicious plant-based foods.
And who, you offer that to schools and hospitals, any place else? So what happens if where else would you might offer that?
We do. We've actually, this past year, we've done it at Harvard and then Palomar Health, which is in San Diego. So any institutions that are interested in learning more about plant-based cooking and just getting a broader aspect of that, we are willing to work with them.
And how's that been received?
It's been received extraordinarily well. We just hired on a chef that's going to be conducting these all over the country. And more institutions are eager to participate in this because of the benefit. I think a lot of times chefs and other culinarians may not have had extensive education or experience specifically with plant-based cooking and doing something more than a pasta with marinara. So this allows them the opportunity to really work with other chefs as well as receive some training and tools that they can bring back to offer these delicious foods to their customers.
And, you know, when it comes to the hospitals, do they do no added oil type cooking in dishes as well, or how does that go?
They certainly can. There's a variety of recipes available, some that do have oil in them and then some certainly that don't. And we work with, you know, with a hospital that is interested in specific type of recipes. We certainly work with them to match what's going to meet their needs the most.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen places, you know, do they then, you know, start to offer the entrees every day as a part of their menus? Or, you know, how do you see this progress?
Well, the whole idea with a Meatless Monday or the Lean and Green or whatever an institution chooses to call it, if they do, is that it really is not a one-size-fits-all model. They can implement it as they see fit as to what's going to work for them. So looking at a meatless day or using this concept as branding for meatless options on a daily basis. And I think we're seeing that more at the hospital and college and university level, where they're looking at actual percent reduction of meat purchases. So whether it be looking at a 20% reduction in 2 years, making those specific changes so that it's not just one day and that it is progressing on a daily basis.
And I guess this involves educating the dietitians at the hospitals as well.
It does. It's really a team effort in working with dietitians, the chefs, the directors, and getting everyone on board. And that's another resource that the Humane Society offers when we meet with these institutions, and whether it be the dietitian, the chef, or the directors, we have a lot of resources available to them in terms of education on health, environmental, but also animal welfare, and just overall sustainability efforts that can be utilized to communicate with staff, with the community, with their customers. We have marketing and promotional resources that are available as well. So it's really an all-encompassing program in that we have a lot of resources to help make their initiative a success with everyone involved.
That's fantastic. Who does usually the initial contact to you all? Like, you know, I mean, is it all, you know, is it going to have to be a vegetarian? You know, I mean, it's, you know, somebody has to think outside the box. I think, you know, plant-based nutrition. I talked with, you know, Brenda Davis. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's a registered dietitian and does a lot of, you know, research type of things. And mm-hmm. She was saying she was in Taiwan at a hospital, and it was just like, and she was in the kitchen, and there was just like, you know, mounds and mounds of greens. They serve so many greens to their patients mm-hmm. and everything. It was, you know, just wonderful, as opposed to, you know, the usual U.S. kitchen where the food service comes off a truck and things are bagged and, you know, not really palatable. You might see a couple leaves of iceberg lettuce on a tray and things like that, you know, and it comes down to, I think, is how you can provide the cheapest meals to the masses for the most part. So who decides that they might want to do this? I mean, what, you know, I can't, I'm trying to follow the reasoning. Who would approach you?
Well, you would be surprised that actually a lot of institutions do approach us, but oftentimes we do the approaching and let the institutions know what we have to offer and the resources that are available and that we're here as a resource to support them in these efforts. It's not necessarily that the programs don't want to move in this direction. They're seeing the demand from the customers at one end, wanting to know where their food is coming from and that it's sustainably sourced. And I think that's why we're seeing even larger growth in the local and the farm-to-school efforts and looking at the farm-to-table in that aspect. But once they know the resources that we have available to them and they don't have to recreate the wheel, I think it is even more reassuring and it eliminates some of the perceived barriers that they may find in doing a program like this, like showing that it isn't cost prohibitive, but we've actually found that many times there's cost savings tied to offering more plant-based foods and using plant proteins as opposed to animal proteins, or talking about the issue in concerns with participation and finding that districts and institutions are seeing oftentimes their participations increase. So I think just getting past some of those perceived barriers makes it that much easier for programs to implement this.
Yeah, I mean, it should be really, once you have the program implemented, it should be a cost savings. And certainly, you know, in institutions, as far as things going bad, or, you know, the incidence of salmonella or E. coli or all this other kind of stuff with food service, you know, food safety, you would think it would start to be a no-brainer that this is the way to go.
Absolutely. And again, we're seeing more and more programs jump on and see the true benefits from the health aspects, from the food safety. I mean, what now we have, you know, with the avian influenza epidemic, really people starting to think even more about these issues and what's going on and how they can have a positive impact on their health, on their food safety, the environment, and on the way that some of these animals are being treated.
That's fantastic. And, you know, and again, I mean, the schools, I think the kids would probably be most receptive. But, you know, I know a lot of the nursing staff in hospitals, you know, they're yearning to have good food choices from a cafeteria. The obesity epidemic in healthcare providers, you know, I mean, it's
right.
We don't portray healthy individuals taking care of sick people. We often have sick people taking care of sick people. And,
right.
You know, so I think if, you know, again, it just makes such good sense that, you know, if you can provide healthy food for your workers and healthy food for your patients, healthy food for your children, that it's going to be a win-win all around.
Absolutely. And that actually sparks a story that I just learned about from one of our partners at American University in Washington, D.C. I recently went to a seminar where he spoke on his experience with Meatless Monday, which then stemmed to further plant-based options on a daily basis. He had just joined American University's dining services and thought that they had daily vegetarian options, I'm sure similar to like a pasta marinara or something like that, thinking that he was meeting the needs of his customers. And he stated that he heard a lot of feedback from the students that they wanted better options in terms of vegetarian and plant-based. And he conducted a focus group with them to really sit down and examine what they were looking for. And he heard their feedback loud and clear, but it wasn't necessarily resonating. And he made the choice at that point to become vegan on campus and only eat the options that were available so that he could truly understand what they were talking about and meet that need. And he said it was funny, too. He said for the first week, all he ate was pears because he had no clue what to eat. but then worked with his chef and continued getting the feedback and worked with his dietitian, who did guide him on proper eating habits for a vegan diet. But they stemmed into a large-scale program. He was known at that point, too, as the Incredible Shrinking Man because he was overweight, and he said that he had high blood pressure, very unhealthy, and adopting this vegan diet changed his life. So really having customers understand that and see that, what a positive impact these foods can have. I mean, food truly is medicine. So it was just a really encouraging story to hear from a customer, and then he could relay this information to show what a benefit it was having. And now American University has amazing food options. I also was able to enjoy some of those as well when I was there. It was delicious. They have their own sustainability chef, and really making a point to meet that need. But those foods appeal to not only the vegetarians and vegans, but all customers. And that's truly the goal, making those delicious foods that appeal to all.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they're presented in a way that people, you know, often, I'm sure you've had the experience, you go out to dinner and you order a plant-based option, or you call ahead and you have them, you know, make me a plate of vegetables or whatever, and it comes out and you've got this gorgeous plate of color, And the other people have this little slab of meat and a couple little things around it, and they look at your plate and want yours instead of theirs.
Right.
So it's just a matter of presenting it, you know, so that people can see it. I have started, you know, when I decided to do, you know, teach plant-based and encourage my patients to become plant-based, you know, I talked about it. And of course, the first thing that people say, you know, well, I just don't want to live on celery and lettuce. And it's like, well, I don't live on celery and lettuce. And then I would start and tell them, you know, well, I had this for dinner, you know, and I would kind of name my dinners for the last couple of days, or I would say what I had to eat for the day. And they would invariably say, well, that sounds pretty good. And so I started this nutrition course in the office, and you know, I talked about things. And so finally every Wednesday I bring something for them to eat and to sample. And it makes a huge difference when people actually see it.
Absolutely.
You know, that they enjoy it, you know, they taste it, because, you know, and it's funny because, you know, I hear everything. I have really good hearing, and people are coming. So I'm kind of working both places. So I have it set up in a little dining area, and I'm walking around, and people will be coming down the hall, and they'll ask, like, you know, what's the treat for the day? And this one lady, she's like, my nurse said, well, there's a carrot salad. And she said, oh, I don't like carrots. And, you know, it was carrots and pineapple and raisins and, you know, nuts and walnuts and things like that. And, well, by the time I get back in the room, she's like eating, you know, she's cleaned her plate and she said, this is delicious, you know. But, you know, she had the perception walking down the hall that there's going to be just shredded carrots, you know, or something, you know.
Right. Well, and it's interesting too, to expand upon what you just said. I was reading an article where because a lot of times kids can be a bit of a pickier eater, and it's natural. I have a stepdaughter who's 11, and she's starting to really try more foods, but it's been a struggle in working to expand upon some of her favorite foods. But I think that some foods that maybe as a child or as you're younger that you do not find appealing, you carry that into adulthood and just automatically think, well, I tried that once and I didn't like it. But looking at different cooking styles and really working, like you said, to make these foods appealing, that it really turns around the thinking that, okay, it's not that I don't necessarily like it, or maybe I didn't when I was younger, but trying these foods in different ways to get people excited.
Yeah, it's that you know, we'll turn it that way. So you became vegan when you were at Florida State, or you were vegan beforehand?
I was actually a vegan beforehand. However, during my college and then years after, kind of went back to a vegetarian and did implement small amounts of poultry and fish, but I've been following a vegan diet for the last, I would say, year, full on, just understanding not only the health and environmental aspects, but focusing also on the issues related to animal welfare.
And what about the people that do you actually have an office in Sarasota with the Humane Society? Is there a place that you're located, or, you know, do you interact with other people? What's the vegan content of the workplace?
Well, I work remotely here in Sarasota. So the vegan content is what I make on a daily basis for myself. But the office is based in Gatlinburg, and I do visit with my colleagues, but understanding that people everywhere have different diet patterns, but with the understanding also that we want to inflict as little harm on animals that are being raised for food too.
Very good. You know, because it's there's some, you know, I mean, there's it always amazes me the disconnect. Well, even like, you know, veterinarians, you know, I mean, it seems, you know, when I talked about, I have tried, and our dogs are mostly plant-based. They actually get a little fish. They get some mackerel. But when I talk to vets about things like that, you know, it really doesn't resonate that well. And, you know, it always kind of amazes me that, you know, the difference between we have the perception between companion animals and farm animals, you know,
right.
You know, and it's a way most of us were brought up, but, you know, it's when you get more and more into that, you know, the humane society, you would think that, you know, the light bulb might come on a little quicker, perhaps.
That's right. And, you know, working to benefit all animals at the Humane Society, and specifically with a focus on farm animal protection, that is an important part. So working not only at the meat reduction end of it and focusing on those plant-based foods, but working with food manufacturers and companies to instill higher welfare standards for the animals that are being raised for food is something that we do as well.
It's all a process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I heard an interview. I don't know, and it's funny, I don't know the owner of Esther the Pig. Esther the Wonder Pig. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
Yes, I don't know their names. I heard an interview with the father, I should say, I guess, of Esther. And, you know, he was talking about when they first got Esther, they weren't vegan. And they just kind of adopted this pig. And they were actually frying bacon one Saturday morning. And kind of looked at Esther, who was in the house. She was in the kitchen, and they looked at each other, and that was kind of it, you know? It's like...
Oh, right. The light bulb went off.
The light bulb went off. It's like, we can't do this. And, you know, that was the end of it, you know? And so it just comes down to kind of making connecting the dots first, you know, at some point.
Absolutely. And like you said, with the companion animals, pigs and chickens and cows are individual beings, just like the cats and dogs that we have in our homes. And to think about that in terms of intelligence and personalities and making those changes, not only, you know, choosing, if you will, to follow more of a plant-based diet in that way, but also to focus on treating these animals humanely, if they are being raised for food, to still treat them like beings and make sure that their basic needs are at least being met.
Yes. Very, very good. So what would you, what would you recommend to people as far as, you know, so your recommendation would be to try a meatless Monday? Are you a kind of all-in type person, or I guess you're more schooled in the gradual approach of converting people into plant-based?
Yeah, I think that, it's a journey, and food is definitely a very personal choice. And with Meatless Monday, or any type of, whether you want to call it that, or just choosing even a meal a day to go meatless, that it's an excellent opportunity to make a positive change on a weekly basis. And you're looking at your health aspects again, the environmental aspects that you can change just by doing that, and also helping the animals. So I do embrace the gradual change, and with that, then, people are going to see the benefits of moving to more plant-based foods.
If a church or a group were interested, could they contact you to get information on your products?
Without a doubt, yes. And they can also go onto our website, humanesociety.org/meatlessmonday. But I will also be happy to send you the link for this information if any of the listeners are interested.
Oh,
they can certainly contact us.
Yeah, that would be great. That way I could put it on the show notes and people could make the contact. Because I'm thinking, you know, it would be great for you know, some church organizations, there's a lot of churches that do, you know, dinners for people and they have their church functions, and it would be great to maybe make, you know, one a month, a meatless one.
Absolutely. Hey, every little bit counts.
Yeah, very good. Well, I will look forward to, I guess you're going to do a presentation tomorrow at the hospital?
Yes, yes, I will be there. It's a little more informal, but yeah, I'll be talking more specifically about some of the resources that we have that Fawcett can utilize.
Yeah, that, I can't wait to hear it. I'll look forward to meeting you. I rarely get to meet people that I interview, so it'll be great to meet you in person. And so you're the owner. Just as a side note, you have four rescues.
Well, I actually have. We have seven.
Oh wow!
Dogs. So yes, we worked locally with Canine Castaways, which is a small dog rescue here in the area. So they go from Tampa all the way down to Naples and really rely on their foster homes mm-hmm. for most of the dogs. And we became involved. We adopted our Chihuahua through them. And then and became involved in fostering. And I am sad to say that we were multiple foster failures, but we're now helping in other ways. But yeah, we ended up with seven, and a few years back had to move to a home with more land so that they could run around. So really, everything we do is focused on the happiness and benefits of our dogs.
Fantastic. Yeah. You're not that much different from Esther. You know, the story goes that when they got Esther, they thought Esther was going to be a little pig. And Esther turned it to be a full size, I think six, you know, I don't know if the number was 300 or 600 pounds. The picture, she looks closer to 600, really. But, you know, so they actually moved to a farm so that they could take care of Esther, and they end up getting more pigs, you know. So,
on the way.
Yeah. It's quite a great story. So, yeah, I mean, I think we'd have trouble. We have four friends, and you know, if we went, you know, we would come back with more. That was
right. It's hard to say no.
It is.
I think I saw an apron that it said dogs are like potato chips. You can never have just one. So.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Well, but we can switch it to kale chips.
Exactly. Well, I do appreciate you taking time to talk to me, and look forward to meeting you tomorrow, and we'll carry this on. Maybe we can get involved in some of your programs.
Fantastic, Jamie. Thank you so much, and it was a pleasure speaking with you.
All right. Have a great evening. Thank you.
All right. See you tomorrow. Uh-huh,
bye-bye. Bye. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Carla. She's such a pleasant and informative person. Very enlightening, all the programs that the Humane Society has to offer. I did get the pleasure of meeting with her the next day in person. And, you know, if you are an institution, I would encourage you to contact Carla Dumas and the American Humane Society if you would like to initiate a Meatless Monday. They have programs that will walk you through step by step how to get this program up and running in your school, your church, your college. And they supply handouts, pamphlets, ideas on promotion, step-by-step guidelines, even a cookbook in preparing large quantity plant-based meals. So, I mean, it's truly an innovative idea by the Humane Society to decrease animal consumption. And these are all very plant-based, healthy menus. There are a lot of kid-friendly menus. You know, some of the ones that she mentioned on the podcast were, you know, quite interesting and great ideas. And a good way to introduce kids to plant-based eating. So, you know, I just think that's a great idea. I hope to collaborate with her some here locally. We're going to introduce the Meatless Monday and perhaps a meat-free March at one of the local hospitals. I'll try to get her over to the other hospital in my area as well. So, you know, I'm excited about having this great resource available. One thing I didn't mention about what's going on is my wellness program. We just graduated the second class. It's a six-week class. And in that class, I had one person lose 29 pounds, another person lose 25 pounds, and his angina went away. Another gentleman lost 15 or 16 pounds. So virtually everybody in the class, one lady has, we've cut down her insulin and her diabetic medication. So it's been very successful. And a lot of the people that started it weren't too sure about whether they could do it or not, and so have really embraced it. And they're starting to spread the word to their family members as well. So it's very exciting. We'll start our next class June the 24th and, you know, go on from there. But it's been really a lot of fun. And I think it's informative and supportive for my patients. So I'm hoping to expand that as we go along. Again, if you have any questions for me, Jamie Delaney, J-A-M-I-D-U-L-A-N-E-Y @gmail.com. I'd love to have a nice iTunes rating. The more the merrier, the more it gets put up. Tell your friends, have them listen to the podcast. If you have any ideas or for an upcoming podcast, please let me know. I'll entertain anything. I've been getting some nice feedback and emails, so I appreciate all of those. So until next time, continue to be plant strong and get out there and enjoy some sunshine.